You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 22nd of July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Derek Janssen from Rensburg. Quite a wild day in markets, rands, gold and everything else. Henry Biddlecombe, the tech has dominated the last decade and the pandemic can continue. And Keith McLachlan on that data tech update. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb, COVID-19 to push SA savings to record low, and from Business Day, Domino's pizza stores to be auctioned off. Morning markets, US was mixed overnight, S&P 500 up 0.2%, while Nasdaq slipped 0.8%. Asia red, Sydney down 1.2%, and Tokyo off 0.5%. Commodities mixed, oil a little weaker. The story, gold, $18.58. That is up $37 since this time yesterday. Rand at $16.40. In fact, trading just under as I look. And top 40, looking for a flat opening.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Derek Janssen from Rensburg, portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, morning. Appreciate your time. A couple of notable features as we wake up this morning. We've got the rand fraction under 1640. We've got gold at 1858. Yet if we look yesterday, our miners had been under pressure. I imagine that's in part they've had a good run, and in part perhaps the rand taking some of the shine off their US dollar earnings.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, just looking back over the last 24 hours, we had some strong moves in some key tech stocks, you know, particularly in Tencent overnight 24 hours ago. And then you spoke about the Nasdaq obviously being quite lofty a couple of days back, very much driven by some moves in Amazon and Tesla. But as you quite correctly stated, you know, a lot of the shine today and where we sit right now is on gold. You know, for the first time in many, many months and even years, we're starting to see quite a strong fundamental case for some of our local gold miners right now. So, you know, sitting where we are right now at 1858 on the gold price, certainly some leverage in some of these gold plays at the moment, obviously counteracting that, as you mentioned. We're sitting on a bit of a stronger rand, you know, low interest rates environment, interest rate decisions this week. I do think that, you know, a slightly stronger rand from where we are at the moment is pretty likely at this stage.
Yeah, and that stronger rand, I mean, if we go back to, I suppose, the rand strength and the commodity boom sort of pre the global financial crisis in 08, 09, the miners were still able to make profits. And truthfully, you know, as long as our commodity prices stay at decent levels, and broadly, oil aside, they have PGMs more or less at their pre-COVID levels, gold running quite well, even iron ore, frankly, staying up. The rand strength takes some of the shine off the earnings, but it doesn't completely deplete them. It still gives a bullish case for miners if commodities stay up.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're obviously going to be pulled and pushed on the other side of the coin when it comes to the commodity prices and the currency, but certainly not major moves in the currency that takes that shine off where these miners are at the moment. Remember, as we previously discussed on the show, you know, these miners, global miners, are in very much a different position to where they were circa 4 years ago, where a lot of their debt has been dealt with. They're sitting quite cash flush. Cash flows are strong. They're not running around doing major acquisitions around. So, you know, I think, you know, they've managed a crisis back in 2016 very, very well. But the companies are well positioned. And it just gives them an ability to weather a bit of currency volatility in the short term. So, yeah, it takes a little bit of the shine off, but I think all eyes would probably be focused more on the commodity price side of things at this stage.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Mining balance sheets generally the world over probably the strongest they've been in the history of mining. And we can go back to the 1800s for that. They really have fixed up those balance sheets, which puts them in a really good position right now. Education stocks. We saw Stadio off 7% yesterday. Cura's been under pressure. Advitec being under pressure. Education coming into the pandemic was always a good story. Obviously, pandemic has changed that in all sorts of different ways. Is this a sector on the local exchange, Derek, that you're looking at, or is it a case of let's see how this lockdown sort of shakes out?
Look, I think, you know, just from a local context, some of the education stocks are really quality of nature in terms of, you know, the core assets that they sit under. You know, one stock that comes to mind is Curro. You know, obviously been beaten down. They did announce a capital raise that's going to take place in due course just to kind of bolster their balance sheet. But remember, they're sitting on some good quality, call it property assets. And, you know, I think the J-curve of earnings for a company like Curro will probably only start to kick in the next year, where you start to see a lot of those students filter through the system and sort of make their way to that matric-type level. Obviously, Stadio coming out of the Curro stable, but very much focused on the tertiary side. I think between Stadio and Curro, if you end up taking up your Curro rights that you're getting opportunity to do in the short term, they're very cheap at the moment. I think they're well-run businesses. Obviously, not going to be flavor of the month in the very short term, but good quality companies to stick in the bottom drawer and just be patient with.
Last question. Invicta announced, I'm trying to get my days, Monday, that they were selling some assets. In essence, they're selling assets to fix debt. Of course, at the same time, they're frankly selling revenue. Stock, we had a really good Monday, had another good Tuesday. Is this something you're looking at, or is it still just, it's still tough for that company out there?
Which company did you mention?
Invicta.
Invicta. Yes, obviously dealing with their debt issues at the moment, and we've seen the share price rally up. Lots of talk about them even potentially raising a little bit more capital through by way of a rights issue. I don't think they need to do it. I think selling off some core assets has been enough to bolster the company fundamentally in the short to medium term, you know, dealing with a big fraction of their debt. And, yeah, unfortunately, you know, when you're in this precarious environment, sometimes you do need to sell off a few assets just to sustain the longevity of the business. I think, you know, the industrialized space that it operates in is not something that's going to bounce back quickly, again, over the short to medium term. But what they've done is they've obviously just bought themselves a bit of breathing space and a bit of breathing room to weather the storm that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great point, some breathing space. Derek Jansen von Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital. Always appreciate your time, Derek. Thank you.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Keith McLachlan, he's a fund manager at Alpha Asset Management. Keith, appreciate your time this morning. Data Tech update yesterday. It's weird, this is a stock that I remember it in the 90s. I remember its boom days in the dot-com era. It's one of those that survived and continue on going. The update yesterday, really solid. I mean, they're talking about it's 4 months for financial year 2021. Revenues slightly lower, but operating costs much lower. Market liked it, up 7%. Your take on it? Looked like a good update.
Absolutely. And first, I have to disclose that we have an investment in that, so I'm obviously biased. But I thought it was a very good update, but expected as well. Datatech's got a long history, as you alluded to, but in the last couple of years, Jens has been driving a value crystallization process. And you can see that they sold Westcon Americas for $600 million. It's about $9 billion in rand, so it's about double the market cap. Currently, they've returned the majority of their cash. They've done a massive share buyback. And then they're focused on turning around Westcon International while running Logiconis, which is the other half of the group, very, very well. And all of that's really coming through in update. What we've seen, particularly in Westcon International, is this turnaround from a loss-making operation a number of years ago into one that is increasingly profitable. Now, it's worth noting, at the time they sold Westcon Americas for $600 million, i.e. double their market cap, Westcon International had the same revenue. So if they can nearly turn this business around, It's sitting in a position where there's a huge amount of upside to potentially unlock here.
Yeah, and Rescon, I mean, Datatec is you know, they're a networking provider of equipment. I mean, in the Rescon International, you know, it's network cloud computing, it's remote access, it's virtual office environment, enhanced network security. All of that, I mean, that just plays into a pandemic and a work from home environment. I mean, they're in the right spot. They've been doing it for a while, and they must be seeing a significant increase in demand from their clients.
Certainly. So as a major global distributor of predominantly Cisco equipment, as you alluded to, that there's big tailwinds, you know, work from home, increased digitalization. And obviously the pandemic driving lockdowns is driving digitalization or remote working. All of that plays very, very strongly into Rescon's hands, particularly as over the last couple decades there's been proliferation in technology vendors. But there's actually been a consolidation in technology distributors. So if you're one of the big, strong, and global distributors, of which obviously Rescon is one of them, there's only a few of you in the pendulum. Part of our thesis is that the pendulum is swinging back in terms of leverage and bargaining power back onto the global distributors because there's just so many technology vendors. Then the final point, because about half of their distribution is Cisco equipment, including the security side. Obviously, with trade wars and increasing geopolitical tensions between the world and China, what we've seen is a Huawei banned in the UK, across Europe, banned in the USA, and things like that. So there's, and that's really the big competitor versus Cisco equipment. Now, Rescon, interestingly enough, stands to pick up the indirect volume from that because, well, if you can't use one of the major providers, Asian providers of networking equipment, well, you're probably going to default to Cisco.
Yeah, it's Cisco. And then, of course, Logicalis is at the same time playing into that same space. As I said, a really, really solid update from Datatec. The market liked it. We also see some activity in terms of companies picking up stakes in it. We'll leave it there. Keith McLachlan, Fund Manager at Alpha Asset Management. Appreciate your time. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness, and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Henry Biddlecombe. Now he's a fund manager at Anchor. Henry, I appreciate your time. Talking tech stocks, an article that you published, it was a fascinating read. One of the sort of first paragraph really struck me. If we go back to 2011, call that almost a decade, the Nasdaq's returned 267%, S&P 140% over the period. This tech rally that we're talking about is not a new sort of just pandemic scenario. It has been going for close on a decade. Pandemics helped it, but it's an old rally. Tech is winning.
Yeah, I think it sums it up nicely. It's not just the pandemic that's driving a rotation into technology stocks. It's certainly understandable that it's helped it along the way. Mm-hmm. But there are very real, very fundamental reasons for what we're seeing happening in the market. And it really is as simple as taking a look at the world around you and taking notes of how it's changing. And, of course, that's going to manifest in the way one invests as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you know, oftentimes we go back and we say, oh, 20 years ago we didn't have cell phones and our internet was dial-up. But truthfully, 10 years ago we might have had a cell phone, a smartphone, but it wasn't very smart and you know, there wasn't that much tech around us. And what we're seeing is scale, Sandra, as you, the phrase you used, scale begets scale. As these companies get bigger, they're able to use that network effect. For example, Facebook. I mean, you know, we have got other social networks. We had MySpace, but Facebook now at approaching 3 billion users. I mean, I can't see a new competitor coming. They've got that dominant position. And there are many other examples, Amazon, Alphabet, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's an economic phenomenon that is, you know, fairly unique to the tech sector, and that is, you know, as these companies become bigger, so they become more efficient, and so their rate of growth starts to accelerate. I mean, the amazing thing to me, Simon, is that if you look at Amazon, for example, which today is one of the world's largest companies by market capitalization at $1.6 trillion as of yesterday, it's doubled in value, or more than doubled in value in just the last 2 years.
Yeah, and that's their potential for it. And I mean, and to the point of Amazon, they're giant in North America. They're fairly dominant in Western Europe, but there's another whole planet out there. The other point we're seeing, and we see it from Amazon, we see it from all of them. Amazon with their Go stores coming through, you know, their Prime offering, which they keep on adding to. Alphabet, for example, they do revenue of some $35 billion, sorry, operating income. They take 15% of it and throw it back into R&D, into innovation. These are giant numbers that then just propel them forward and again kind of create a moat around them because they've got that level of capital to put into innovation.
Yeah, I mean, that is one defining characteristic of the space. You know, in general, technology companies reinvest almost everything back into growth, back into the creation of new ideas. And they're quite adept at it as well. They earn a healthy return on that reinvestment. And that's really why you see that very high rate of growth coming through. And now, because of the size and the scale that they've reached, you know, that R&D spend totals in the hundreds of billions of dollars every year. So they really are leaving the rest of the economy behind in that regard.
And that then plays into valuations. You know, it's almost a sense of, I mean, to your point around Amazon, you know, now $1.6 trillion, but doubled in the recent past. The valuations, traditionally, we would look at it and scratch our heads and say, how does a big company like that grow further? Well, they grow further by not sticking to their core business. They grow further with innovation, with that ability to throw billions into it and find new markets and new strategies. I think of AWS from Amazon, which 15 years ago didn't exist, today could be a standalone business.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, these management teams are actually teaching the rest of the, I guess, the global corporate world a lesson in capital allocation, because they do seem to be quite successful in taking a fairly long-term view on things. And as investors, we need to adjust the way we analyze them to match that, because you need to stop worrying about what the share price looks like relative to next quarter's earnings or even next year's earnings. And you need to try and come up with a view on what that business looks like in 10 years from now. And as an investor in these companies, really it's only in year 8, 9, or 10 when you'll realize a lot of that value. But as many shareholders in companies like Amazon and, for example, PayPal will know now, when that valuation comes through, it can be powerful.
Yeah, and as they get that pipeline going, that 8 or 10 years' time, well, they're clicking in now, and there's more coming. A last question. You know, we've been talking the traditionals, the Alphabets, the Facebooks, the Amazons, etc., but there's a bunch of other ones out there. You mentioned one I'd never heard of, and it's fascinating, and I think I'm pronouncing it wrong. Keh, if I'm right, online tertiary education. I mean, they've got 3.5 million subscribers, and they are absolutely taking the U.S. college system and just turning it on its head.
So I love your pronunciation, Simon. That is a South Africanism if there ever was one. we do pronounce the J as a K, but it's Chegg. Okay. And you're right. I mean, they took a view on the U.S. college system, and that is it doesn't make sense anymore to go and commit yourself to a four-year-long qualification at a cost of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then you're going into a fairly tight job market, and it's actually difficult to gain employment that will allow you to pay that debt off. So they've come up with some fairly job-specific courses, which take 18 months to complete. It's mostly centered around programming and information technology. But they only make you pay when you get a job.
Yeah.
So it's almost a guaranteed outcome. And I think it's a great business model. They've achieved a lot of traction. Of course, all the courses are delivered digitally, so you don't incur the cost of accommodation or attending a campus. And they're growing at 30% per annum. So it's just one example of many smaller technology companies out there which are changing things for the better in several different business categories. I mean, as you point out, you're not restricted to investing in the FANGs. Mm-hmm. There's a very broad universe out there, and as an investor, I think it would pay you to spend the time, building some knowledge around the space.
Yeah, I think that's the key point. Is, two points. Don't be scared of tech. This rally's been a decade, but it's probably the rally of our lifetime and many more going. And it's not just the FANGs. There's Chegg as well, which without the hard G, and they're disrupting education in fundamental ways. And there are going to be hundreds of others out there which we can add to portfolios. Henry Biddlecombe, fund manager, Anchor Capital. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available from 7. Chat to us on social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.